This week's episode of War Rocket Ajax is brought to you by our friends at Valiant, who would like us to talk to you about Bloodshot Reborn number one. And folks, Bloodshot Reborn number one is awesome. We have read in advance of it, and if you have been following our advice and supporting the show by checking out what Valiant has to offer, then you are already excited for what's going down in Bloodshot Reborn, because it is spinning out of the events of The Valiant, which has been an amazing and beautiful comic. But if you haven't, if you've been like, guys, I want to support the show, I want to support Valiant Comics, but I don't know where to jump on with these outside of Ninjak, where can I jump onto the Valiant universe? Well, you can also jump on Bloodshot number one as a new reader and jump right into the amazing adventures. Now, Matt, you have also read this comic, and you can confirm. I'm not just saying this. It is a hoot.
It is great. And here's the other thing. Like, so often, you know, comics fans talk about how they want something new, something fresh, something different from their comic books. And Bloodshot Reborn is so new and so fresh, such a different take on the character. We can't even talk about what happens in it. We can't tell you what happens in it, because it's that shockingly different from what you know of Bloodshot in the past. It's really clever. It's really smart. If you read Bloodshot back in the 90s, even if you picked up Bloodshot when Valiant got going again a few years ago, this is going to be a whole different take, a fascinating take on the character that you're going to want to read. So listen, go to your comic shop. Tell them you want Bloodshot Reborn number one, by Jeff Lemire and Miko Suyan. You're going to be glad you did. And tell them Ajax sent you.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That's War Rocket Ajax, to bring back his body.
And welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most dangerous and destructive comic book and pop culture podcast. And we are your charming and affable and occasionally musical hosts. My name is Chris Sims. With me, as always, my co-host, Mr. Matt Wilson. Old Matty Sitback is your new name.
Hey. That we decided on. I had to lean up because I was sitting back.
You're always sitting back.
That's right.
Matt, how are you tonight? You doing good? I know you're a little under the weather earlier this week.
It was a one-day thing. We'll talk about it in a moment when we do checks and recs. Get ready. You're going to hear all the grisly details.
Oh, I'm excited. If there's one kind of details I love, it's grisly details.
Well, speaking of grisly details, our guest this week...
Are you talking about bears?
I'm not talking about bears. I'm talking about predators.
Ooh.
Because our guest this week is something of a master of putting grisly details into comic books. Alex DeCampi is going to be with us.
And we are going to have a super fun conversation about her upcoming comics, Archie vs. Predator, which you can guess that we're pretty excited about, as well as No Mercy, which she's doing with Carlos B. McNeil, which is a coming out from Image, I believe, and it is... It's turning into a scary one right from the start.
Grizzly is the word. And no, I don't mean bears. With an S, not a Z. But before we talk to Alex, and before we get to checks and recs, which we have alluded to, Chris, we should thank a handful of our patrons on Patreon.
That's right. These are people who have decided to support the show by going to patreon.com/warrocketajax, helping us keep the lights on, specifically helping us get health insurance, and supporting the show a little bit monetarily. We always like to thank them here at the top of the show. Matt, who are we thanking this week?
Jack Murphy III.
Thank you, Jack.
Michael Eckett.
Thank you, Michael.
I really chewed on his name. I attacked it.
You did. You went for it.
Justice Hepburn.
Thank you, Justice.
Simon McDonald.
Well, thank you, Simon.
I'm really digging into these names tonight.
You really are. Like, it's like we're on top of it tonight, Matt.
Matt Hoadley.
Oh, it's one of yours. That's your name.
That is my name.
Thank you, Matt.
K. Katie Coleman.
Thank you, Katie.
Ryan Holiday.
Thank you, Ryan.
David Versace.
Thank you, David.
Daniel Rowe.
Thank you, Daniel.
Ben Olson.
Thank you, Ben.
Jeff Mara.
Thank you, Jeff. I feel like Ben Olson is a longtime supporter, too.
Well, here's a friend of the show, somebody we both know. Great artist, JoJo Seams.
Oh, JoJo, thank you so much. And I'm assuming that is JoJo and Andrew. But thank you. Thank you both.
Say so. This one is just Craig.
Oh, thanks, Craig.
Stephen Cudmore.
Thank you, Stephen.
Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
Josiah.
The wizard from the Monty Python movie.
Josiah Lockley.
Oh, thank you, Josiah.
Recap Podcast.
Thanks, Recap. Like, I honestly thought that was going to be somebody's name. I thought, what an amazing name if someone named their kid Recap.
Well, it could still happen. Vincent Hilton.
And apologies if that person's name actually is Recap Podcast. That is a pretty great 21st century name. What was the next one, Matt?
In the year 2050. Vincent Hilton.
Thank you, Vincent.
And the last name I'm going to read tonight is Tron Quan Luong.
Thank you, Tron.
And those are our patrons that we're thanking this week. We appreciate you all. You are all special and important to us.
You really are. Like, that sounds like we're making a joke, but it is actually 100% true, and we genuinely appreciate it.
I have a gene that is incapable of anything I say sounding sincere, but I do mean
it. It's true. I have known you for years, and I have never, I always have to ask if you're being, like, you told me you were getting married, and I was like, are you serious?
Let's do checks and wrecks, Chris.
Let's do it.
All right, Chris, what do you have to check in with this week?
Oh, it's kind of a big one.
It's a big one, yeah.
It is kind of a big check this week. I'm writing a Marvel book.
Oh, shit. I don't...
it's an X-Men book. And I'm writing it with Chad Bowers, my co-writer from Downset Fight and Subatomic Party Girls. Oh, it's very exciting. It's very, very exciting.
We're having fun.
Yeah, we are. We love to have fun here on the show. No, Matt, I'm for real writing a Marvel book, though. It finally got announced. Can we continue with the show?
Yeah. Look, I'm in a I don't pull out the Mad Decent app unless I'm in a very celebratory mood.
We have not busted out the Mad Decent app in a long time, and I feel like this is an appropriate celebration.
Sure.
It was announced last Friday, if you are listening to this when it goes up. Chad and I got the job doing the X-Men 92 comic as part of the Secret Wars tie-in. You've been paying close attention to Comics Alliance over the past few months. You will notice that I have not been covering any Marvel books lately, and that I always, you know, sort of mention here on the show that I have a working relationship with Jordan D. White, who is, in addition to being my podcast co-host on Sailor Business, is an editor in the X office. So that's where everything stands. We are super, super excited about it. Obviously, you know, I mean, God, I wrote that episode guide for the X-Men animated series, and I talked constantly about how I was 10 years old when that show came on, and it kind of blew my mind. And, like, going back to that era of X-Men, we've been going to cons and just buying back issues, and those comics are so weird. And yet, those are, like, I remember reading those comics and being so intrigued because everything is so weird and there are so many questions that are asked and not answered. And it's really, really exciting. Chad and I are like really stoked about it. And like, I'm really happy. I'm having a pretty good time.
Well, I know we just talked about my complete incapability of being sincere, but, allow me to say that I am being 100% sincere when I say, congratulations to both you and Chad. I think you're both well deserving to have this Marvel project under your belt, and I'm sure it is the first of many, many projects of its type to come from the two of you.
We've been working on it for a while. The funny thing is that it, like, hit me just last week. It's like, you know, Cyclops and Beast and Jean are in this. Those are Jack Kirby characters. We're writing Jack Kirby characters. They let us do that.
Yeah, they gave
you
the keys.
They really let us do that.
They gave you the keys.
Yeah, like we signed we signed a contract and everything. It was pretty great. It's going to be digital first. It's an Infinite comic, so if anybody's going to be looking for it, I believe there's going to be a print version that'll come out after, kind of like they did with Deadpool the Gauntlet. But if you are looking for it, it is going to run first on Comixology and the Marvel app, and there's going to be, you know, all the kind of digital trickery that you've come to expect from stuff like Digital Comics and Batman 66, which we're really excited about. I'm not sure if they've announced our artist yet at the time that we're recording this, but he's great. He's absolutely fantastic. Our colorist is amazing. We're really, really stoked. But yeah, it comes out, I think, in May, so we've got a long time to hype it up. But yeah, it's a pretty big deal for me this week. Matt, I think you did not have as good a time this week. What was your check?
No, my check is that I spent all day, I believe it was Tuesday, just as sick as I could possibly be. It was that kind of sick where, like, you just lay in bed all day. Like, I was working all day, but I would just get up, check my computer to make sure nothing had fallen apart completely, do, like, the 20 minutes of whatever I needed to do exactly at that moment, and then just fall back down. Here's the crazy thing about that 24 hours. Like, I had a 24-hour virus because, like, by the next day, I was eating. Like, I felt fine. But during those 24 hours, I felt absolutely terrible. And in that 24-hour period, I got, like, three or four of the biggest bummer emails I could have possibly gotten. Like, rejections and just, like, stuff I didn't want to hear. I even tweeted about, like, Chris, you and I had have been working on a Movie Fighters book for a while. And there's a chance it could still happen, but for various reasons, it's being put on the shelf right now. One way you can help is to go subscribe to Movie Fighters. That might actually make that happen. But I tweeted about it.
You only have 90 minutes of Chris and Matt in your life every week. Then yeah. You're barely even living.
I'm not saying obviously. You have to listen to it. Just go subscribe to it. But
you don't listen to it. Just go directly to iTunes and hit subscribe and 5 stars. That's all we need. That's all we need from everybody.
But look, I got the email that was like, yeah, that's not happening right now that day. And then I got a couple other emails that were just like, ugh. But the thing was, I was so sick that I couldn't, like, sit down and stew about them. I just had to be like, fine, whatever. I'm going back to bed. So it was actually, like, weirdly the perfect atmosphere to get that kind of bad news in. There's a part of me that wishes, like, I could just wait until a day I'm really sick and then tell everybody to give me their bad news that day. Because I don't have time to think about it. I'm too sick.
Well, I'm glad you were able to kind of compress a week's worth of bad times into one day. I'm not sure the rest of the week was good for you.
It was fine. Things are progressing in my world at a pace. All right, let's make some recommendations, Chris. What do you have to recommend this week?
My rec this week is going to be it's something of an annual tradition on War Rocket Ajax that I always talk about this when it comes around. But right now is the annual WFMU fundraiser marathon that they're doing on the air. As you know, I'm a big fan of WFMU in general. That was the radio station that originally brought us The Best Show, which has now kind of just moved on to thebestshow.net. Evan Funk Davies, who's a friend of the show, has been a guest on the show. He is a DJ on WFMU. Huge actually does the theme song for his show. It is fantastic freeform radio out of Jersey City, New Jersey, and it's entirely listener supported. And if you value things that are listener supported, if you value things that aren't, you know, corporate underwritten, then head over to WFMU.org and maybe throw a little money their way during the fundraiser marathon. If you're not familiar with WFMU, then head over to WFMU.org anyway, because part of what the funding supports is that they have massive, massive archives of, I think, 10 years worth of every show that they've broadcast, and they are a 24-hour station. You can stream every show from so many programs, and there's so much great music. You can go pick a like any random episode of the Evan Funk Davies Show or of Terry T's Cherry Blossom Clinic or Bill Kelly's Teenage Wasteland, which is a great kind of garage rock show. Gaylord Fields does like doo-wop and girl group stuff, and is actually has spent time in my hometown in South Carolina. It's apparently his grandmother was from here, which I know because he read out my pledge on the air, and when he got to my hometown, talked about it. It's something that's really important to me, and it's something that I value a lot. And you know, if you're the kind of person who likes to kind of back stuff on Patreon, this is sort of the version of that that's been going on for a long time. It's a lot like an NPR pledge drive, but they only do it. They take 2 weeks every year to sort of raise the money that supports the entire station, and everyone who works there, like on air, is a volunteer. Nobody gets a salary for it, but they all like really believe in what they're doing and kind of, you know, putting out really good stuff in a like the world of radio is an amazingly corporate world. And WFMU, I think, does something that's really valuable, and they stream it anywhere you can listen online. So I am in the tank for WFMU. There's also great rewards that you can get for pledging. So definitely head over to WFMU.org and check it out, because I did. And when I supported, I checked the little box that's marked support for life. So every year, it just automatically re-ups my pledge. And if I can do it, you can do it. So yeah, check it out. Matt, what is your rec this week?
My rec is something that kind of sustained me throughout the week, including on my sick day. And
Is your rec me?
That's right. No. My rec is always you, Chris, but my specific rec for this week is the new show on Netflix, The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Okay, now I was wondering what you thought of this.
Now, have you watched it?
I have not watched it because my girlfriend watched it and she was like, yo, this is going to bum you out if you watch it. Much like what happened with me and her and me watching The Last Man on Earth.
Now, what's the bummer factor of it?
Now, I don't know. Hang on a second. She's actually in the room right now. Sweetie, how far did you get in Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt? Two episodes? She said the two episodes of her watching were just a person trying to be nice and just getting shit on constantly. And it's like, yeah, I don't think I can take that in my life.
Maybe that's the case in the first two episodes, but she pretty quickly turns people around. Like, she's got this, like, the whole idea is that she's got this kind of, like, infectious enthusiasm. And I was afraid that she was just going to be Lady Kenneth from 30 Rock. Mm-hmm. Like, in the promo stuff, that's absolutely what it seemed that she was going to be. She is not that. She is a very enthusiastic person, but she's also fairly normal. She's just been in a bunker for 15 years.
Okay, so is that the like? I know nothing about it.
That is
like
that, I don't even know the basic premise. The premise is that she got roped into a crazy apocalyptic cult and lived in a bunker for 15 years. So her entire conception of the world and pop culture and everything else is stuck in 1998. That is the premise of the show,
and this is a Tina Fey show, right?
Right. It's Tina Fey.
So it's
Fey.
Kind of the
it's very much structurally similar to, and the music is exactly the same as 30 Rock. Like, well,
there was the character that Andy Richter played, you know, Liz Lemon's brother.
Yeah,
who was kind of permanently due to his head injury stuck in 1998.
Yeah, there are considerable similarities to 30 Rock. Probably most of all, as I said, is the music, because Tina Fey's husband is a composer. He did the music for 30 Rock. He does the music for this show. The theme music to Kimmy Schmidt is infectious and great, but all the like score of the show sounds exactly like the score of 30 Rock. It's a little disconcerting, actually. There's one gag on the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt that, like, I still can't totally wrap my head around, and I think I hate it, but it doesn't break the show in any way. Okay. But it's also this, like, weird... It's this weird example of how this is a Netflix show and not a network show. Because I think this is something that would never fly on a network show. Not because it's, like, too dirty or anything like that. It's just, like, so... Such a weird thing for a writing staff to pick up and run with. Near the end of the season, there's a court case that runs through the last three episodes. And basically, one of the jokes is that the prosecutors in this case are the prosecutors from the OJ trial, who disappeared from California and then just went and became prosecutors somewhere else. Like, somewhere else in Indiana. But it's this, like, weird winky thing where it's, like, just kind of telling the audience, like, oh yeah, they're the OJ prosecutors. And it's such a strange thing for the show to pick up and run with. But to be fair, it's, like, the only, like, really, really majorly weak gag that I can recall from the show. I would not describe it as people just shitting on a nice person constantly.
Now, if I am a person who is, like, you were a much bigger fan of Nathan for You than I was, because it just made me so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Do you think it's gonna be something I should give a shot?
Stick
with it through episode three?
I wouldn't describe it as uncomfortable in any way.
Okay.
Like, even when people are being kind of mean to Kimmy, she... you know, gives it right back. Like, and people, her responses are so strange that people don't really know how to react to her. Like, they can't fire back at her because she's got this, like, weird, upbeat teenager sensibility to her. Because she went in the bunker when she was 14. So mentally, she's still kind of 14 in a lot of ways.
I saw that, you know, I mainly watch television through Tumblr gift sets these days.
Sure.
Which I think is the preferred way to experience media. Because, look, cuts out all the bad parts, just give me them 2.5-second loops. And I saw that, you know, 1998 called, you know, they want the clips back. And it's like, oh, 2090 called, you're dead and you wasted your life. Like, that is an atomic burn.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. But, like, even that character, like, ends up kind of coming around to Kimmy. So, stick with it. That's going to be our recommendations.
All right, I will give it a shot.
Chris,
what do you say we talk about some comics?
Yeah, let's do it. What do we want to kick it off with here?
Oh, we've got, like, it is a week of new beginnings, Matt.
It really is. And
you have purged all the sickness from your frail human body. I've got new stuff going on. There's two on here that we're compromised on.
Yeah, so let's start with the most compromised, I guess, and that is a comic we've talked about a lot in ads.
Yes.
But we're going to talk about now ad-free. We're free to talk about it however we wish. That's Ninjak number one.
Oh.
It's finally
this
out.
This comic's so fucking good.
It's really good. Like, we are not being paid to say this. It's really good.
And look, Valiant Comics literally gave us money to talk about this comic. But, like, this is a comic we would be talking about anyway. It is something that we have said. If you've heard the ads that we have done for Ninjak and The Valiant and Bloodshot, like, we're not such good actors that we can fake that level of enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Here is what I want to talk about with Ninjak. It's really great. But there's something that I didn't know about Ninjak, and I don't know if this was part of the old continuity or not. But he's actually not Ninjak. He's Ninja K, because he gets his assignments from, like, MI6, yep. And they have an alphabetical listing of ninjas. So there's a Ninja A, a Ninja B, and a Ninja C, all the way down the line. And he's, like, Ninjak is Ninja K,
yeah.
Which I think is hilarious.
I mean, and that's, like, the thing is, like, that's probably 10th on a list of, like, most, like, what moments in this comic, because you've got a sumo crime boss.
He's amazing.
You've got a lady who can set things on fire with her hair. You see the castle where Ninjak lives.
Yeah, Ninjak lives in a castle. I don't know if we mentioned that.
I talked to Matt Kent about this book for Comics Alliance in an interview, and he was just like, "Yeah, I love coming up with this crazy shit to incorporate into Ninjak. Like, he's the ultimate character for a 12-year-old. Let's give him all of that."
That's totally what it is, and that's kind of the best way to put it. He is exactly a character for a 12-year-old.
He's everything a 12-year-old would want to be and want to read about, right?
He's literally what if James Bond was Snake Eyes.
Yeah. And
so, like, no fucking wonder we love this book.
But at the same time, like, this book, there's, a real sophistication to it.
Yeah, like, the thing that got me is, like, it's... Like you said, he's James Bond as Snake Eyes fighting a naked lady whose hair sets things on fire.
And a super wrestler.
But it's also super smart. Like, the action is done really, really smartly. The kind of backstory that you get for Ninjak is, like, super dark. But not in a way that I think, you know, tanks the book. Like, we often talk about how, you know, there's a darkness that you get in superhero comics, and the Valiant comics are, like, they are full on superhero comics. Like, Ninjak blocks a bullet with his forearm, but, like, it's dark in a way that's, like, kind of interesting, but it doesn't, you know, it basically skips over the part that a lesser book would show.
Yeah. But here's the other thing. It's also funny. There's a part where Ninjak, the bad, when he's trying to infiltrate WebNet, he is
talking about when he's talking about the final test of the sumo crime boss.
Yeah, he is robbed of his clothing, thrown out into the city somewhere, and told to make his way back to the office. So he beats up teenagers and takes their clothes, and there's just this shot of him in these, like, two small teenagers' clothes.
Yeah, it's like a pair of skinny jeans that he can't button, and, like, a halter top with a wolf howling at the moon on it. And then right after that is there's a scene where it's like, okay, here's his final test. He's just going to have his men beat me, and I have to not fight back. But, like, all the close-ups of, like, the fists going into his ribs and stuff, like, all the, like, really dramatic violence is, like, the close-up is on a wolf, like, a t-shirt of a wolf howling at the moon.
It's top-notch. A+.
It's great. If you liked Andy Diggle and Jock's Losers, I would say that this book has that feeling.
Yeah, like I didn't put that connection together at all, but this has absolutely got that sensibility to it.
Yeah, and again, they gave us money, so take it with a grain of salt if you need to. But this is seriously, like, you know, we've been in the tank for the Valiant books since well before they were sponsoring the show, and Ninjak is like, it is another one that, like Quantum and Woody, like Archer and Armstrong, even like Eternal Warrior, like, they're all really great action books that aren't afraid to be funny and dark and kind of silly and compelling at the same time. So I really, like, Ninjak, it's so good.
All right, let's talk about the other comic we're kind of compromised on, and that is Howard the Duck number one.
Yeah, and I want to mention, you might not have heard this, I am doing a Marvel book.
That is by Chip Zdarsky and Joe Quinones, and I liked it.
Yeah, I should also say Chip Zdarsky is the only comic creator to have put his tongue directly in my ear when I met him at Emerald City. Like, that happened at a con, so I'm shocked that both of us didn't die. Like, I'm sure we were just, like, walking bags of the plague at that time, but I guess it was the first night, so whatever.
Chip has built up a tolerance, I'm sure, but
yeah, and also it's like it's on me for not expecting that. You know,
well, like, let's talk about this comic he wrote. It sort of does this thing where it's like Howard the Duck for beginners, but
yeah,
it does it in a really like compelling way that isn't just like, here's a bunch of stuff that happened to me. It's just kind of like a soft reset button.
There's a lot of him kind of explaining who he is and what his deal is, but it's in a way that's like, it's kind of affable, because a lot of it is Howard complaining about his situation.
Right.
which I think is really funny.
And I'll say my favorite parts of this issue are absolutely the parts where, like, I love the setup of, you know, Howard's status quo and, like, the opening scene with him in jail and all that kind of stuff. But what really, I think, sells me on it is his interactions with other Marvel characters, particularly She-Hulk and Spider-Man.
Yeah, like, I was reading that Spider-Man bit, and, like, especially with the way that it ends, which I don't want to spoil, but, like, the ending is so fucking funny.
Yeah,
like, the ending with the Spider-Man bit is so hilarious.
It's basically a piss take on Spider-Man, right? But
yeah,
in a way that, like, doesn't make you, I don't know, if you're, like, a Spider-Man guy like me, I don't know that I'm that sensitive about it, but if you are sensitive about it, you wouldn't be like, oh, I don't like that.
Well, it's not Garth Ennis's Wolverine, you know?
Yeah, it's exactly.
Like, that's kind of the ultimate piss take comic. I really enjoyed this. And again, I've been a fan of Chip's, like, since, what, like, 2005? Like, when I read Monster Cops? And I am so excited, because, like, obviously, he's a funny writer. Like, if you're familiar with his non-Chip Zdarsky work, you know, to break kayfabe a little bit, brother, like, you know that he's, like, a funny writer. But it's been so long since he's done comics. And, like, I think everybody was kind of surprised when Sex Criminals looked as good as it did. And, like, if Sex Criminals did nothing else, like, we've got two brand new Chip Zdarsky comics coming out this year that would not have come out if not for Sex Criminals. And it's like, Howard the Duck is really fun. And I didn't forget the name of it, but, I mean, geez, he's doing one with Kagan McLeod, who did Infinite Kung Fu.
Yeah.
That book's going to be awesome.
Oh, yeah. And let's not you know, joke around about the art in Howard the Duck.
Oh, no, Joe Quinones is amazing.
It looks
absolutely fantastic.
So good. Like, this version of Howard is rather different looking than the Howard of the 70s. And that is because of weird legal stuff that happened in the 80s. But he looks great, and all the character designs look great. There's a scene in this number one issue where Howard and his new lady companion are doing a montage workout scene.
Yes.
That is, like, all the humor is right there on the page, right there in the art. It looks great. It's funny. It's really good. I enjoyed it.
I didn't even think about it until you brought it up, but it is kind of hilarious that Howard the Duck looks less like Donald when Marvel is literally owned by Disney.
Pre-Disney.
Yeah.
There was a big fight
there.
There was a big fight over how Howard looked. All right. The last comic
He looks more like the movie Howard the Duck.
He looks a lot like movie Howard. The last comic we're going to talk about is Southern Cross.
No conflicts.
No conflicts on that one. Southern Cross number one. It's written by Becky Cloonan, and the art is by Andy Belanger, and I am intrigued. This is, to put it very succinctly, a murder mystery set on a passenger ship in space. It's like, you know, one of those classic murder mystery on a train stories or murder mystery on a cruise ship stories. But the person who has been murdered isn't actually on the ship. She's on a planet. It's actually a moon, Titan, that the lead character is trying to get to figure out what the hell is going on. There's a lot of, like, world building in this issue. A lot of, like, notes about this corporation that is clearly kind of in charge of everything. And we get the sense that the lead character has very mixed, weird feelings about her sister. And then things get nuts by the end of it. It's like a lot of setup and intrigue in this first issue. A lot of establishing a mood, a lot of establishing, like, a kind of you can't trust anybody sense to the whole thing. But even though some of it's kind of nebulous coming out of the first issue, I really enjoy and like the tone that has been set. Like, there's also, like, a weird sense of aggression to everything. Like, from the second page, everybody is being aggressive to the lead character.
No, I have not read this book yet. I am really looking forward to sitting down to it, and I have it here. But I think I posted them on Comics Alliance. Andy Belanger has been doing amazing design work on this book.
Yeah.
Like, you can see a little bit of it on a couple of the pages, but he's done, like, massive cross-sections of the ship. He's doing, like, all new ship designs. And, like, I mean, look, I love cross-sections. Y'all know that. But the way the stuff looks is, like, it's really cool because it's all, like, you know, like, what would an oil tanker look like in space? Oh, it would look like an oil tanker.
Yeah, I mean, there's a establishing shot in the first issue of what, it, like, basically a space airport would look like. And it looks familiar as an airport, right? But it's also this, like, three-dimensional space thing. It's really cool.
There's really great design work. I'm a big fan of Andy Belanger's obviously, I am also a big fan of Becky's. Like, you know, we had her on the show. You guys know. Andy Belanger has been doing stuff. I'm pretty sure he worked on Kill Shakespeare with Anthony Del Cole, which was a really – it's the Shakespeare team-up book, which is really cool, which I think is still going. He had a book called Black Church that was the size of a 7-inch record that was only available at cons that is also, like, really great. There's a lot of cool stuff, and the designs that he is turning in for this book are just unbelievably good.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I think it's a little early to pass judgment just yet, but I'm intrigued and excited. Chris, it's time to get into our interview with Alex DeCampi.
Joining us for the program this week, we are very excited. We have a first-timer, a first-time guest on War Rocket Ajax. She is the writer of the upcoming Archie vs. Predator, as well as No Mercy with Carlos B. McNeil, Archie vs. Predator with Fernando Ruiz. Alex DeCampi is joining us. Alex, it is great to have you on the show.
I'm very, very happy to be here. Yeah, long-time listener, first-time
okay,
caller.
Are you really a long-time listener?
Well, I'm a longtime reader of Chris's columns.
Okay, nobody listens to this show.
Well, no, I hardly ever listen to podcasts because anytime I'm home and writing, I can't listen to anything with words. And, like, my writing time is incredibly compressed. I'm a single mom. I take care of my mother who has had a stroke. I have pets. I get maybe sort of 6 hours a week to write, and then I just retreat into my writing cave and growl at everyone. And then when I'm lettering, which also takes up quite a large amount of my time, my daughter's generally home, and then I'm afraid I'm kind of chained to Disney soundtracks. It's like, oh, I might want to listen to a podcast. Elsa! Oh,
really? Well, that's really shocking, because you are, for someone who has 6 hours a week to write, you're extremely prolific.
Well, there's that old Leonard Bernstein quote about, like, if you want to be great, have a plan and not quite enough time. When you do have a lot of other calls on your time, you get incredibly focused about getting shit done. And also, I'm very strange in that I will just write things completely on spec and then find a home for them. I mean, No Mercy, issue one hasn't come out yet, and I've written issue 8.
Wow. Okay, so yeah, now I'm really feeling bad.
Archie versus Predator is wrapped, like done. It was done in early February. So the series with Matt Southworth that hasn't even been announced yet, I'm feeling guilty because I've only written 3 out of the 5 issues.
So I
pitch very few things. Like, the funny thing, I'm very different from a lot of writers who seem to throw out a lot of pitches and then write things once they're accepted. I don't want to write a lot of things, so I just find things I like, disappear into a research hole for about a year, come back, be like, oh, I'll write that now. I write it, and then I sort of go to Eric or to Brendan at Dark Horse or someone and be like, hey, I've written this thing. I found this well-known artist to draw it. Would you publish it? And they're generally like, okay, sure.
I like that idea because that makes me feel like you spent a year doing nothing but watching Predator and reading Archie. We should make you very close to how I spend most of my weekends.
I did read almost 5,000 pages of Archie comic to do the book. And I rewatched Predator several times. I mean, it's a movie I can mostly quote by heart anyway, and I'm very much a Predator 1 girl. Predator 2 was all right. The other Predator films existed in an alternate continuity, which I occasionally acknowledge but don't really recognize as canon.
Well, I have so Alex, many questions based just on that one sentence you just said.
Alex, were you aware that in Predator 2, he's in New York with some time to kill?
Yes.
All right. I think we're gonna have to do this set rapid fire. Okay. Question number one: what is your favorite line from Predator?
Oh my goodness. See, Shane Black pussy jokes. God, it's hard. There's so many of them. There are so many of them. Oh Lord. I'm trying to think of ones I also specifically reference in Archie versus Predator. I don't actually use Get to the Chopper. I was trying to think of a way to like shoehorn in like some sort of old school Harley Davidson action. I managed to shoehorn a lot into those four issues, but I didn't get the old school Harley. Goddamn sexual Tyrannosaurus.
That is a pretty good one. That is a pretty good one.
And we do actually have Reggie saying that.
Really?
Of course.
That's perfect.
So Reggie says it, and then Jughead comes back with what tiny appendages and soon went extinct.
Oh my god, that's even better. That's perfect. I should say, if anybody's listening out there who is looking forward to Archie vs. Predator, and I'm going to go ahead and guess that like 99% of the people listening to this are looking forward to Archie vs. Predator. We had a discussion before we started recording, and we have the potential to get a little spoilery. So, which leads to my next rapid fire question. Do Archie and Jughead do the Dylan and Dutch a power handshake at any point in the series?
They don't do the power handshake. However, Jughead does end up wandering down the main street of Riverdale saying, what are you going to do? Kill me? No, come on and kill me. What's the line?
Kill me now.
Yeah, kill me now. The entire... like, all of Riverdale's main street gets destroyed in issue two as the boys and Midge completely unload on Riverdale. So there's this great intro in, like, the first page of issue three, which is, like, you know, Riverdale, you know, this perfect, you know, Victorian houses, its quaint and charming main street as Jughead wanders down it in drag because they've had to dress him up like Veronica for reasons because he's the only one who can fit in Veronica's clothes because the Predator's actually after Betty and Veronica.
Of course. Why wouldn't it be?
Honestly, of that entire crowd, like, the most dangerous examples of their species are clearly Betty and Veronica.
Yeah, like, you sent us over some preview pages. And
yes.
It's like an issue zero, right?
Well, no, that's actually part of issue one.
They
pulled out for Comics Pro kind of the middle of issue one.
Okay.
The setup is basically that it's spring break. I mean, but one of the reasons this crazy crossover really, really works is it falls into essentially the teen summer camp slasher genre. Like, the teens go away for spring break and in a hot place, you know, it's Costa Rica. It's a really hot spring, possibly the hottest on record. And fall afoul of something that wants to kill them. Jughead wins the trip to Costa Rica in a bag of crisps because Jughead. And so they all go, and there's this great scene with a double page spread, and like I think it's pages like 2 and 3. Like, having written my Grindhouse series, which is a bunch of 2-issue exploitation stories, which you should totally buy because mama's got rent to pay. I'm used to really getting into stories very quickly, so like there's not a lot of preamble. It's like, bam, and they're in Costa Rica, and here is Dutch's bar, and there is someone reading Sergeant Cock, and, you know, it's like with the big Shane Black glasses, and there you go. Like, all these Predator Easter eggs that Fernando Ruiz has thrown in there, they're just fabulous.
It's like before the Predator even shows up in the pages that you sent us, like, Betty has blood running down her face.
And their clothes fall off in the most adorable kind of like exploitation movie way, which is just the best. Like, their kind of clothes are all shredded. It's very, you know, any Russ Meyer film. you've ever seen.
It's all drawn in this like classic Archie style, which, you know, we've certainly had our share of. Go ahead.
It's much more wrong in the Archie style. I mean, it's not like that's what a lot of people have been weird about. It's not the Archie horrorverse with the very dark artwork of like Sabrina or Afterlife with Archie. It's not that kind of serious horror film for serious grown-ups thing. This is just like we call it the Archie splatterverse. So, like, there's the Archie Horrorverse titles with you know, they're sort of very old school Vertigo and stuff. And then there's, like, the silly Archie crossovers, like Archie meets Kiss and Archie meets Glee, which are all kind of fun and harmless. And then there's me flaying teenagers and giving Betty a broken nose and making, like, nose doctor jokes. So I have managed to create this little universe where where Fernando Ruiz, who is so on board with this, and he is such a brilliant artist. He's so good. He can draw anything. He was originally doing some of it in a really E.C. Warren kind of like slight tweak style, and they were like, no, you can't make the flayed teenagers that detailed. Just buff it down a bit. And he's like, oh. But at the same time, like the Predator's ship lands and like there's this turtle who's like, eek! You know, it's just really, you know, I just want to hug the book. I love it so much. I want to take it home with me and hug it.
Well, that's the funny thing. Like I did a really short interview with Fernando Ruiz, and he's a longtime Archie artist, and he works in that, you know, classic Dan DiCarlo Archie style. And you know, I mean, he has to have drawn, you know, dozens, if not hundreds, of Archie stories.
Yes.
And you know that there's been a time when he has just, like, sat down at the drawing table and drawn, like, Archie getting his head blown off and then, like, sighed and erased it. Just because, you know, the sheer amount of time he has spent with those characters, like, you know, I'm sure, and I asked him this question, and like you said, he seemed like he was completely all for it, that... You know, like how much have you wanted to kill off these teens at some point in your career? go at them.
I mean, if you look at that, the leaked page two, issue two, page two inks, which is where Pop gets his head blown off.
Oh, yeah, I saw that the other day. That's bonkers.
Both him and Rich Kozlowski, who are doing those incredibly gorgeous inks, are obviously just having the time of their lives. And the great thing about Fernando is... You know, this book is a splatter book. There's a load of gore and there's a load of comedy. And the thing about Fernando is he keeps the comedy going in the background. That like whole business with the fries, that like the Jughead's in the background, Pop gets his head blown off with these beautiful hand lettered sound effects and this big smudge where his head used to be. It's really fabulous as he goes to cut a cake with a big knife. And all the kids are like, ah, and Veronica is legit doing the kind of Carrie bloodbath, original like Sissy Spacek Carrie bloodbath scream thing. Like we directly reference that. And then Jughead's just like eating his fries a little faster. hoping that's ketchup.
What ended up being your...
And that is the least gory thing in that issue. That is the least gory of the several kills in that issue.
What ended up being, like, did you end up having a favorite Archie story or a favorite obscure Archie character from the 5,000 pages of Archie comics you read?
I love the 40s stuff, because the strip stuff. There's actually one, there's a Bob Montana one that's inked by Joe Kubert, of all things. And I tweeted it ages ago, and it was the perfect encapsulation of Betty and Veronica. And Veronica's like, oh, it's the Princeton Winter Festival. You know, Betty, do you have, like, do you ski? Do you skate? Do you have a winter sport? And Betty is just there, like Betty Draper, like eyes wide with the hollowness of her obsession. She goes, no, just Archie. And I was like, this is my favorite Archie strip in the world. It's three panels and it sums up the entire series. So yeah, I love the really Archie. I love the 40s Archie stuff because it's really, really quite dark. And that's in some ways what I was trying to get back to. I mean, in some cases, like Archie have been amazingly patient with me because I put some stuff in there that's I know has caused a ruckus over there. And Roberto has very much been my linebacker in this, deflecting all the people who want to rush at me and bury me. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I'm going to get a line about a threesome in there. Like, there have been some things where they're like, Alex, Archie wants the changes. Are you okay with that? And I'm like, yeah, I suppose that's not really the hill I want to die on. The line about the threesome, that is my hamburger hill. That is the hill I will die on. We are getting a line about the threesome in this comic. Uttered by Dilton as he gets into a giant mecha suit that's shaped like Archie, like a giant Archie.
Oh my God.
Because obviously, like, I was sitting down going, what would make this comic better? And I'm like, Predator versus a mecha. Like, Dilton always builds these machines. So, like, Dilton's obviously in the AV room building this mecha. And the conversation he has with, like, Archie and Betty and Veronica, after Jughead's been killed, as they walk through the
Spoilers.
I told you I was going to spoil the whole thing for you. Like, after Jughead has been killed and his head embedded in a vending machine, which, you know, it's for me is a really proper, you know, sort of, memorial to Jughead, with his spine dangling among like the Babe Ruth and the Heath bars. So as Dilton and Betty and Veronica and Archie are walking back, like Dilton's having this whole like comment about this, like this quiet discussion about how incredibly sexually frustrated he is and how the whole school is about sex and everything's about Archie and there he is and nobody ever thinks about him. And Archie's not really listening because no one ever really listens to Dilton, and that's kind of a thing. And then Dilton is like, so I built this. And they go in and there's this giant Archie mecha. And Veronica's like, why is it Archie? Dilton's like, but everything is always Archie. That's the problem. Don't you understand? And he gets in there and goes, don't worry, girls. I'll kill the Predator. Just think of me as Archie for a while. And as the helmet shuts, he's like, and then we will have a threesome.
So no subtlety. And then we will have a threesome.
And then we will have a threesome. Yes. But he's kind of saying it quietly to himself. Like, they're not really meant to overhear that. But obviously his mind is like, and then, you know, you shall render yourselves unto me. Because, you know, he's kind of an incel. I love Dilton. But he is.
Alex, if you'll indulge me for one moment.
Yes.
Your Honor, Judge Sims. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I'm going to pull together some evidence here because we've talked at length about Predator versus Archie, and more than likely we'll come back to some of the details of that. But I want to relate it quickly to No Mercy, which is also a comic
about killing teenagers.
About teenagers in horrible death situations.
Yes.
You spoke about how you take a year to research all these stories. Alex, have you been working through some stuff in the past year?
No, I just like writing teenager stories. I honestly haven't. I unfortunately watched too many Sam Peckinpah films at too young an age, so I kind of think that's the way you tell stories. There's not a lot of subtlety and there's a lot of death.
Did you have a favorite?
It varies. Cross of Iron is always a huge favorite of mine. What's the one that, like, it was horribly edited by the studio about a general who, like, sort of a Confederate, no, it's a Union general who ends up going up against the Mexicans. It's got the most wonderful line in it. It's like, you thieves, deserters, and gentlemen of the South, as he goes to address a bunch of sort of convict troops. But yeah, I'd say Cross of Iron was my favorite.
I am a Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia Man, and I'm not going to lie, 90% of that is the title.
Yes, I can believe that. But Cross of Iron is amazing.
It is an enjoyable movie, and Warren Oates is great in it, but like also, that is the best title a movie has ever had.
Yes. Yes, it is. I think one of the reasons we got round to Peckinpah was that I've always described No Mercy as, like, you know, what if Sam Peckinpah directed a teen film? You know, what if he took a John Hughes script and was like, okay, now I will change this to my thing. I just love writing teenagers. I don't have any particular desire to harm them overall. It's just, they're fun. Teenagers are fun to write because they're so incredibly dramatic. like just in general, like things that happen to teenagers, which might seem quite trivial to the jaded adult, are incredible life or death dramatic situations to that teenager. So then when you take them and put them in a real incredible life or death dramatic situation, it's fun.
I read No Mercy back to back with the Ashcan of Archie vs. Predator. And the main difference that I noticed was, obviously, you know...
No Predator.
Well, even... honestly, at the end of that first issue, I would not have been surprised if the Predator showed up. But everybody in Archie, like, even at their worst... Like, Veronica is a real jerk in that story. Like, even at their worst, all the Archie characters are still kind of likable. And in No Mercy... which I should say is not based on the WWF game for the N64. In No Mercy, there's a bunch of teenagers, and right away I'm like, oh man, I hope that guy dies. Like, there are immediately characters that I'm like, oh, I cannot wait to see something terrible happen to this guy.
Yep. I mean, the Archie characters, I was very much given a brief of, like, they are all friends, they are all likable friends, and this was kind of somewhat beaten into me, which, you know, I understand. It's, you know, they are... despite their personality differences, they are friends. And some of them are like, Reggie, that friend that like is still your friend. But sometimes you're like, oh, Reggie, man, like just quiet now. No. Like, Reggie, I don't want to hear your opinions on SAE. Just.
Oh, God. I think you might have just ruined Reggie Mantle for me forever.
It's my job to think of these things. They pay me for it. But so, yeah, some of the kids are... but the funny thing is, some of the kids are unlikable and stay unlikable and then die horrible deaths. Some of them I've started off making you not like them, and then it's going to kind of come around the other side, and like grudgingly by like midway through like issue 6, you're going to be like, I actually really like this guy now, and I really kind of hate myself, but I really want him to be okay. So,
well, I mean, there's like, with the way this first issue goes, there's a character named Chad, and there's like no way that you're bringing him back. Like, there's no way you're redeeming that guy, I'm sure.
Chad's a jerk, but also Chad is the most organized of all of them, and if there's one person to get them, the rest of them out of trouble, to like save their sorry asses, sadly, it's going to be Chad.
Oh, but he's so awful.
Like, he is really awful. He's an awful dude, bro, who is horrible to his sister. Just like, horrible. He's also the kind of the, he can be the leadery one in a way and pull the rest of them together in a way that none of the rest of them really can.
Well, Chris, you are well known for not being a fan of horror movies, right?
I don't like scary movies, Matt. I don't like scary movies.
So like there's that sense of like,
so you love Final Destination, though, right? Because Final Destination isn't really a scary movie. It's a scary movie for people who hate scary movies but love figuring out what's going to happen.
No, I am sure that it would terrify me.
No, you'd love it. You'd love it. You'd love it. Trust me. It's the movie. Because I, like most horror writers, except for Paul Tobin, who's hard as nails, am incredibly squeamish. Like, if you talk to me, if you talk to Steve Niles, if you, like talk to any of them, like, the known horror writers, we're all just, like, these horrible, frail bundles of insecurity who quail at the slightest drop of blood. That's one of the reasons we're horror writers, because, like, we can take things that you wouldn't naturally think would be disturbing and then make them incredibly disturbing because they actually disturb us just on a basic level.
Yeah, it's not the things that normally wouldn't be disturbing that bother me. It's like it's like people getting hacked up with machetes.
Yeah. But I've worked on film sets, so now I'm like, oh wow, you can like I can like dissect the gore shots and be like, oh yeah, I can see the little tube and yay. Italian like 60s and 70s giallo special effects are great for that. There's Italian practical effects department with like all the pus coming out the eye sockets, and oh, I love them. It's so creamy.
I get scared watching the commercials on the El Rey network. That's how fragile I am.
But there's a kind of a horror archetype of like the alpha bro who can either be like the biggest dumb jock or end up being kind of a tactical genius, depending on how you use him. Like reading through No Mercy, I was like, oh, okay, I could see this person filling this role and this person filling this role. And I'm sure you're going to subvert some of that. But is that like the intent to kind of like put, maybe
yeah,
kind of put
extent,
those,
you know,
horror
like,
archetypes out there?
Part of it. Yes, but part of it is to sort of throw on some of those, you know, part of it is some of these kids really aren't who they seem. And you're very right to recognize No Mercy as a horror book, because that, yeah, it's very much what it is. There's nothing supernatural about it. And there's no, like, bogeyman, there's no smoke monster, there's no predator, there's no nothing, but it is a horror book. Part of it is that some of the narrators are also extremely unreliable, and not in a, you know, like, deliberate keeping things away from other people front, but, you know, college is a time of great personal reinvention, and a couple of these kids started early. Some of them have things that, like, just wouldn't normally come up in conversation that, you know, they're kind of... that are incredibly relevant in several issues' time, but that they're not really going to just, like, tell people that they're hanging out with, that they're not necessarily going to be friends with. And some of them do actually have some secrets, like proper secrets. So part of it is throwing some archetypes out there. Part of it is also throwing some characters out there that are you're going to have very different perceptions of in a few issues' time. That series is tremendously, tremendously fun to write. And I think, you know, now that I've, as I said, I've wrapped issue 8, I've wrapped the first of the hopefully 3 seasons of it. Because we're going to do a saga type thing where we do 8 issues and then kind of die for 4 months and then do another 8 issues. Because this whole making comics once a month thing, like, that's insane. Like, who does that? Like, that's just too much. But the thing I'm really proud of with that series is how we've kept up the tension over the 8 issues, because you think, like, so a terrible thing happens and then, you know, eventually the kids will have to, like, be found and stuff. But, like, throughout it, like, things keep coming up. Like, some of their backgrounds start becoming incredibly relevant and causing enormous problems. The end of every issue is massively tense. And then at the end of the 8th issue, there's, like, not one but 2 kind of massive mic drops of a, oh my gosh, that's going to leave a mark on the floor kind of mic drop. And yeah, it's just like, I'm really, really pleased with how we finished that and how much it fucks with you every issue.
Well, it's like, I love the setup of this first issue, and I love how much everything escalates. Like, you know, not to spoil it, but, like, first they go off a cliff, and then somebody's like, "What's that sound?" Oh, it's coyotes. And then there's, like, something else that happens where it's like, "Oh, there's going to be, like, literally every kind of danger they could run into."
Yeah, I talk about it as you know, they fall off a mountain and things get worse from there. It's, yeah, I mean, the first 3 issues are basically their first 24 hours. And that's just getting rid of their first problem. And then the other problems start coming home to roost. Even basic ones like no food and no water and no medical care. They become extreme problems. And in some ways then the kids stop. What little cohesion they had starts to fall apart when the outside danger is removed. It's a real kind of Livy's History of Early Rome moment where, like, you know, there's no longer an outside aggressor, so they turn on each other. Not in a truly Lord of the Flies way, because Lord of the Flies exists and it's quite good, and why would I bother rewriting it? You know, one of the realest, most hardcore moments in the entire series is over sharing gummy bears. Shit breaks down hardcore over the gummy bears.
When is the first issue of No Mercy out?
April 1st.
April 1st. And then
Archie versus Predator is April 15th.
And you're done with both of those?
I'm done. Yeah, they're done.
I'm not gonna lie, that is infuriating. I'm so jealous. Excuse me. I have one more question about Predator.
Ask as many as you like. I love that series. Like, I still can't believe we exist in the magical universe where I got to write this series and it's actually going to happen. And they let me, like, be fully me, as opposed to just trying to, like, put me in a box and be like, no, that can't. Like, no, you can't flay characters in the first issue. And, like, no, you can't do that to Pop on page 2 of issue 2. And, you know.
Well, I have a question about the comic, and then I have a question and some subset questions about the movies.
Mm-hmm.
The question about the comic is, you know, I am a huge, huge fan of Archie versus Punisher, or Archie meets Punisher, I should say, because they do not fight in that comic.
Yes. Yes.
It's one of my all-time favorites for obvious reasons. And one of the things I really like about it is that it is this weird comic that simultaneously exists in the Marvel Universe and the Archie Universe. Like, it's completely... Like, you can read that comic as a weird issue of Punisher, and you can read that comic as a weird issue of Archie. And it works. Was there ever a moment where you thought about doing, like, the Archie meets Kiss, Archie meets Glee style, where it was going to be, like, trying to figure out how the Predator would work in, like, if it was just that month's issue of Archie? Or was it from the start you wanted to be like, no, I'm going to do some murders on these kids?
I mean, I come at it from the horror angle, and I'm, you know, I'm the dark horse person that was brought into this. And so, like, I have to, you know, I love writing the teenagers. I've had so much fun writing, as I think you saw in the ash can that you got from Dark Horse. Like, I love writing the physical comedy and interaction between the kids, but, like, you have to please the Punisher, the Predator fans. Like, I can't make it Archie versus Kiss or Archie versus Archie meets Kiss or Archie meets Glee, where it's all kind of foofy and like it all resets to continuity zero and nothing bad ever really happens, because it's the Predator. Like, if nothing really bad ever happens, no one would buy issue two, and I would just hang my head in shame. So, you know, I never thought about.
I would buy it. I would buy issue two. I would buy and love it entirely.
Well, I think you might love it even more.
I'm sure I will. Now, here is my movie question.
Yes.
Did you watch... Now, you mentioned the Predator movies that take place in the alternate universe. Did you watch the Robert Rodriguez Predators?
No, I have not.
Okay.
So 50% of the world says it's amazing. And
it's so good.
It's horrible.
It's great. I love that movie. And I will say, like, I am not a... I'm actually not a huge fan of the original Predator, just because I feel like it weirdly drags in a lot of places, which I know is kind of the point. But for me, that's, like, there's a lack of tension in a lot of it.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like the best version of Predator is the song about Predator.
Yeah. You know, I do need to see Predators. Like, it's one of these... I have an extremely limited amount of time in my life for doing things. I mean, there are things I haven't seen. Like, if we went through the number of like TV series and movies that I should have seen that I have not yet seen, that's why I have all my stories written.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, look, if you have 6 hours of writing time a week, you do not need to take 2.5 of those to watch Robert Rodriguez's Predators. But I will tell you this.
I will some sleepless night be like, I'm going to watch this. And it sounds like the sort of movie, like my tolerance and love for bad movies is quite massive. And so as long as it's got like 10 minutes of entertainment to it, I'm golden. I'll probably love it.
Listen, there is a scene where Adrian Brody takes his shirt off and he is literally as ripped as Arnold Schwarzenegger was in the original Predator. And that was the most, that might be the most surprising scene in cinema history for me.
Yeah. I should say so. I mean, that would be like Archie taking his shirt off and being incredibly ripped.
Which I hope happens. I do hope that happens.
It actually sort of does in issue four, because Archie briefly becomes a mutant super soldier. Because Veronica's dad had some resuscitation machine in his panic room, which he mislabeled.
This is amazing. This book is going to be the best. Might be the best comic of 2015 already.
The thing is, like issue one is insane, and it ends with like, you know, the two characters being flayed and hung from a tree. Issue two is more insane and has more death, and then issue three gets a little bit crazier because we have giant robot Archie, and then issue four is like the craziest of all. And there's also this entire subplot that mostly happens off panel about Sabrina and her house and her family, which I'm really proud of because it's really fucking funny.
Alex DeCampi, I feel like we could get you to just describe Archie versus Predator to us for the next hour, but we do have to move on to questions from our listeners on Twitter. Matt, every week we solicit questions. If people want to get in on asking the people that we interviewed their own questions, how can they go about that?
Well, I see y'all are in that van headed wherever y'all are going. down the road there. I think you and your teen friend should just head on back to town.
Getting scared.
Because ain't nothing good for you over there, that old house. Nope, it's been probably 30 years since anybody's been over there. I'd say instead of going there, you should go sign up for an account on Twitter.com and wait until Thursday night, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 6:30 Pacific. Wait for the ISB, that's Chris Sims, or high-minded MW, that's me, Matt Wilson, to put out the call for questions. And then you can ask a question of our guest like you're about to hear. Now, there's a hitchhiker on down the road. Why don't you go pick him up?
I'm too scared to ask questions now, Matt. Why did you do that? Why did you do that? Our first question is going to come from Notice of Meowry. Who says, what science fiction franchise should Archie meet after this one?
I mean, I'm surprised Archie hasn't done either any of the major franchises. I sort of know why he hasn't done Archie meets Star Wars, just because the licensors are, as I have many friends who have drawn Star Wars and are currently drawing Star Wars, the licensors are incredibly specific and very, like, you would not have a ton of freedom. I mean, I sort of feel after Archie meets Predator, Archie meets Aliens would be kind of redundant because it would just be kids being killed in a different way. And much as I would love to see, like, Betty or Veronica with a full-on chest burster, as I think we all secretly in our hearts would, much as we love them. I mean, I could write Betty and Veronica all day and all night. Trust me. Like, I love those characters. I would still, like, laugh like a hyena if, like, an alien burst out of their chest. I'm also very wrong. I sort of like Archie versus, like, OG Star Trek. Like, Kirk lands in Riverdale and starts hitting on all the women.
Yeah, like, I kind of wanted, like, my immediate thought, like, first thought was James Bond. Just for the scene where Veronica's like, I'm 17. And he's like, all right, you have a good day.
Ma'am. Yes.
I can't believe neither of you have said Archie meets RoboCop.
That was my second
thought. Yes, yes, yes.
Matt and I have had RoboCop on the brain all week.
Although, honestly,
slash like every week.
I was Brandon Graham on Twitter. I mean, it's kind of a hard time to make cop stories really appealing, especially like slightly fascist cop stories in America right now. But yeah, I mean, I think Paul Verhoeven is a genius. I unironically love every film he's ever made. And I think RoboCop, you know, it's beautifully shot and it's just so much fun. That's another one I can quote pretty much, you know, all the time.
But you are on the right show then.
Bitches leave.
Oh, Kurtwood Smith, you are a delight. You are a true hero. I just want to remind.
I think we should all agree that it should be Archie versus Archie meets RoboCop.
Yeah, I just want to remind everyone that Betty's brother in Archie continuity, like canon Chick Cooper, is a CIA agent. Like, he is a legit secret agent. That is a piece of Archie Comics continuity.
And Kevin Keller's dad is, of course, a general. And this becomes quite important in Archie versus Predator, where he comes in to explain a few things to the kids about what's going on.
Does he really? Does he give him, like, the, like, yeah, you know, there was a soldier named Dutch who went down.
Well, no, he does this, like, for the good of the populace. You know, our government keeps a few things from you, and he explains a little bit about the Predator. The only problem is the kids are, like, totally not listening to him. And, like, this is the one line that, like, I really was sad that they cut. I wasn't going to die on that hill, but, like, there's this whole, like, this entire panel background is General Keller kind of explaining the Predator, and Veronica, who'd named the Predator something else earlier on, was like, oh, that's the lamest name ever. And Archie's like, shush, I'm trying to listen. And Betty just goes off into Betty space, and she's like, my uncle was a Predator. Mommy said if he got anywhere near me at school, she'd kill him with a claw hammer.
Oh my God, you really went dark.
But every so often, Betty just, like, I had just would have Betty saying these things that, like, were incredibly dark, but she's just like, oh, yeah, I know what predators are. My uncle was one. And they said that we can't actually have references to sexual abuse of minors in an Archie comic.
You know what? I am a fan of your writing, Alex. I am going to say that was probably the good call.
It was completely the right call. But it's my job to write that comic one step over the line.
All right. Our next question is going to come from Super Geek Mike, who says, this is a question for all of us, and it's a two-part question. What is your favorite Archie team-up story that has never happened? Which I think we just answered that one. And what is our favorite Predator versus story? And Alex, do you have a favorite Predator versus story?
I mean, like I said, I'm just a fan of like the OG Predator story, and most of the book is based on that. I haven't drilled down into tons and tons of the secondary crossovers and stuff. I sort of wasn't a massive fan of the most recent Fire and Stone Predator. I mean, I like the concept of the Ahab Predator, but the miniseries didn't work for me. No, you guys take this one.
I wrote about this one not too long ago. There is a Judge Dredd versus Predator story that is in...
Oh, shit! Yes! That one!
Where Judge Dredd takes his shirt off and is also as ripped as Adrian Brody and stabs the Predator with a knife and teams up with the great-granddaughter of Dutch, which is pretty, pretty great.
Chris, what are your feelings? I don't really have an answer to this, per se, because it's like, you know, you've got Aliens versus Predator, right? You've got Aliens versus Predator versus Terminator, maybe? I don't know. But, Chris, what are your thoughts on Batman versus Predator?
Do not care for it.
I thought not.
I mean, because that was a comic that when I was a kid, that comic came out when I was, 15? And, obviously, I love Batman. And that was one of those comics where everybody would be like, you know, Predator beat Batman so bad that he had to go put on Batman armor. It's like, okay, guys, let's settle down.
Well, but Batman's going to be putting on bat armor again, so, yay.
Oh, but that bat armor's going to be good. Bat armor's going to be so good. Mike Pankowski would like to know, how many pages will Jesse Ventura's character have in Archie versus Predator?
Spiritually, he will have all of them. We have a lot of his lines in there. We pretty much have his death. Lots. Basically, if any action film involving a former pro wrestler is a film I like, and I usually like it for the pro wrestler, I also point to the career of R. Piper Esquire, from the immortal, They Live, to the even more immortal Hell Comes to Frogtown.
Listen, once again, you're on the right podcast to have this conversation.
Well, you're on the podcast
Hell Comes to Frogtown, which is why The Last Man, if the government were made up of nuns, were going to blow up Y's penis if he didn't have sex with women he was rescuing from frog land to perpetuate the species or something.
All I'm saying is Why The Last Man would be 10 times better if it starred Roddy Piper.
Obviously,
just in concept.
Yes,
you're certainly on the podcast that's adjacent to the podcast that is exactly about what we're talking about here.
Now, Alex DeCambi, what if I told you that Dean Ambrose, who's currently in the hunt for the Intercontinental Championship, was in a movie that was Die Hard in a police station that is coming out straight to video soon?
I will see it.
Yes. Tell me. I think that might be another opening night movie Fighters.
Oh, that's gonna be a movie Fighters.
That's
Don't
a special
you worry.
Edition.
Yeah.
Let's see. I think we have time for one more question. This one is from AJ Oaks on Twitter, who would like to know, pop or soda?
Pop Tate all the way.
All right. Very surprisingly Archie themed question.
There you go.
All right. Well, that brings us to a close. It has been an absolute joy talking to you, Alex. I really want you to come back the next time you've got something, because you have been, like I said, you are exactly on the right podcast. No Mercy is out April 1st. Archie versus Predator is coming out soon. Where can everyone find you online?
I'm pretty much everywhere as Alex DeCampi. Alexdecampi. And yeah, I Twitter too much. I Facebook. I tumble for you. And yeah, that's me. And I'm not online all the time because I am trying to get writing done. Trying, occasionally failing. But yes, thank you. This has been a lot of fun.
Thanks once again to Alex DeCampi for joining us. That was a super fun time. I cannot wait to have her back so that we can ask her some more questions. But speaking of asking questions, masterful segue. It is time for our Patreon-supported listener questions segment. Isn't that right, Matt?
That's right. We have some good ones from some of our listeners. And I'm just going to start with this from Anonymous. And this is relevant, Chris. Highly relevant to something we discussed earlier. Is Chris Claremont a good writer?
Now, as I mentioned, I am writing an X-Men comic with Chad. We are co-writing an X-Men comic. Take everything with a grain of salt. But yes, of course, Chris Claremont is good. Like, by any conceivable metric of a comic book writer, Chris Claremont is, great. Now, I mean, I am not a super huge fan of, his later work, but, I mean, there ain't a whole lot wrong with that 15 years he spent on the X-Men, in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, I think people like to make fun of Claremont's tics as a writer, or his...
Well, he has a lot of tics.
His strange habits, his huge dialogue balloons. And yeah, it's easy to take shots at, how every character he writes has an accent, right? But those stories, structurally, they are so well plotted for the most part and play such a great long game. And a lot of them really pay off. Obviously some things just got abandoned, but so many of them really do pay off.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things. He is a writer who really benefited from being on a single book that long, because so much of what he, laid out, he would then go back to. And a lot of the stuff that he laid out, I think a lot of it was, I'll lay this out now, and if I get back to it, great. And if I don't, I don't necessarily have to. But he was on it so long that he kept going back and rebuilding it. He's very ticky, I guess is the way to put it. But to be honest, there's nothing – there's no Claremont dialogue that's any more or less ticky than Stan Lee dialogue or Frank Miller dialogue.
No.
We're just kind of used to Frank Miller's tics. Claremont is equally as ticky as Frank Miller. And, Frank Miller is also a great writer who did RoboCop versus Terminator and then went away somewhere. I wonder what he did. I wonder what happened to him.
So the answer is yes. Chris Claremont is a good writer.
I will say, the interesting thing about doing X-Men 92, the thing that we kind of figured out about it, the first non-Claremont X-Men comic since the one after Giant Size number one, the first non-Claremont written X-Men book is cover dated January 1992. So, the way that Chad and I have kind of been approaching it is that it's the thing that makes 92 so weird is that it's the first time after Claremont. And when you go back and read those books, we've been doing, you're reading, dudes who learn to write from reading Chris Claremont comics, which is hilarious. But also, it's really fascinating because he was those books for so long.
Let's move on to another question.
Next question.
This one is from Ali Ams, who wants to know, what's the best donut you've ever eaten?
Pure donut enjoyment. There is nothing that is better than the Krispy Kreme that comes right off the conveyor belt.
Yes!
It literally melts in your mouth.
Listen to me. Listen to me, Ali Ams. I lived in a big city that had big city donuts. Lots of different things. I went to a place where people lined up at 6 in the morning, bought every donut that this place could sell, and they were always sold out by 8 a.m. It was called the Donut Vault. And they had pretty good donuts, and they cost $3.50 each.
You've talked about this on the show?
Yeah. They cost $3 fucking dollars and 50 cents each. and they were pretty good. They were not as good as a hot Krispy Kreme donut. That is like donut perfection. Like, you can't beat it.
Like fresh Krispy Kreme.
Yeah.
Fresh Krispy Kreme is so good. I went to Portland, Oregon. And I go to Portland. Everyone's like, oh, you got to try Voodoo Donuts. They make them donuts where they put Fruit Loops on top of them. I went and have one of those donuts. You know what it was? It was a donut with Fruit Loops on top of it. Like, I can put Fruit Loops on top of shit in my house. I can make a grilled cheese sandwich with Fruit Loops on top of it if I want to. I'm an adult. Like, it was fine, but it was like everything that could be right about a donut is right about a fresh Krispy Kreme.
You know what you can't make at home?
A fucking conveyor belt with donuts on it?
A Krispy Kreme donut.
Yeah, you can't make, like, you need a factory to make those.
All right, last question. And this one is long, but I think our answer is going to be fairly short. This is from Kill You Last Scene.
Oh, that is a good zine. I think that's Will Moss does that zine, unless I'm misremembering.
Okay, well,
but that is a great action movie zine from the UK. So if you are a fan of Predator, check out Kill You Last.
Is there anything that would make you guys want to start watching Gotham? I genuinely think you'd love it if you approached it the right way. It's not a Batman origin story. It's more like a crazy cartoon CSI Gotham, but with D-list bat villains. It's not sad, mopey 10-year-old Bruce Wayne. It's ace boy detective Bruce Wayne taking down corporate crime. It's got badass Alfred being a badass. It's got Ryan from the OC punching out dudes like Sam Bradley or something. It has crazy Batman 66 villains, a guy who ties corrupt politicians to weather balloons, and a corporate office guy who makes graduates go battle royale for an internship. There appears to be pirates in Gotham Bay, and Mr. Zazz is like something out of an 80s John Woo movie. The Penguin now has a bar where new wave tribute bands play. The Riddler is delightful. It's so, so dumb, and I absolutely love it. Based on that defense, Chris, would you give Gotham another try?
Okay, here is my problem with this question. Don't tell me I'm watching Gotham wrong. Don't tell me it's my fault that I'm approaching it like a Batman origin story when the first goddamn thing they show you is the Waynes getting murdered.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not the one who put the Waynes getting murdered in that show. I am not the one who put 10-year-old Bruce Wayne in that show. Like, it is not my fault that that is how I am approaching it. That said, like, look, all that sounds great. I genuinely love, like, when someone was like, hey, there are pirates on this show. Like, I kind of got excited, like, in the same way that I got excited when I found out Gorilla Grodd's on Flash. And I was like, wait, so, like, is he for real a telepathic talking gorilla? And people were like, yes. Like, I kind of got that little tingle in me, you know? But you know who I want to see fighting pirates in Gotham City? You know who I want to see dealing with balloon criminals? I mean, I'll tell you who I want to see fighting pirates in Gotham Bay. I'll tell you who I want to see, like, I'll tell you whose existence I need to be a thing before I can accept the existence of the Riddler. It's Batman.
Yeah.
Like, I want a show about Batman. The one thing I know I'm not getting.
Here's why I don't really want to start back watching it again. Maybe the tone of the show has shifted completely since the pilot, but I just remember all the pre-show interviews and the tone of the pilot being like, we're just gonna take the world of Gotham seriously, we're gonna be very serious about it, and I don't care if it's doing crazy stuff like having balloon bad guys, if it's still got that, like, I don't know, like, to above everything tone to it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, tone is so important to me. And the tone of Gotham bothered me so much. Because it just felt like, it's like, we're doing a serious show.
I like that voice. I like that serious voice you're doing.
Yeah, you're welcome. So it's going to take more than just telling me that crazy stuff happens to get me to watch the show. You're going to have to convince me that the tone is entirely different.
Yeah, and I mean, like, if I thought that show was a comedy where the joke was that they are presenting it really straight, like Batman 66, basically, then I would at least be intrigued. But again, like, I have a hard time caring about that show for the same reason I have a hard time caring about Smallville. It's like in Smallville, Superman never shows up, right? The last thing that happens after 10 years is that he puts on a costume and he goes, "I'm Superman." But, like, Hawkman was on that show looking like Hawkman. Like, with wings and a mace. Like, Doomsday and Darkseid were on that show. And it's like, yeah, I don't care, though, because you're telling me that this isn't a Superman story.
Right.
Like, I need you to give me something. And the thing that I need you to give me, you're keeping away from me.
All right, that's it for our question segment for this week. If you would like to send us a question, you can do so on Tumblr at warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com.
We will answer them there, or we will answer them here, or we will ignore them.
those
are the three options.
Those are your choices. Also, if you would like to send us an Every Story Ever list for our Every Story Ever specials, or a Word Heavyweight Champion list, you can do that at our email address, which is warrocketpodcast.gmail.com. @gmail.com.
There you go.
Put an at, not a dot. If you would like to check out our website, it is warrocketajax.com. That's where you can see the Every Story Ever list, the Word Heavyweight Champions list. You can stream episodes, you can download episodes, you can leave comments, and you can read show notes. All there. Also, be sure to check us out on iTunes. If you go to iTunes and you search for War Rocket Ajax, you'll find the show. If you like the show, leave us a nice review there, and more people will listen. Now we've reached the point of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us on the internet. For me, all you have to do is go to about.me/MattDWilson, and you can find links to all of my stuff. Chris, where can everybody find your stuff?
Everybody can find links to everything that I do at about.me/ChrisSims. Obviously, I am on Twitter at @TheISB and TheISB on Tumblr if you want to check me out there. Hey, if you like the show, patreon.com/WarRocketAjax. If you feel like giving back monetarily, that would be swell. No presh. But I will say, Patreon backers, they get extra audio, they get bonus stuff, they get sketches that I draw inspired by the conversations that we have on every show. So if that sounds like something you want, maybe throw a couple bucks at Patreon. If not, no big deal. This has been War Rocket Ajax number 245. The countdown to 250 begins now. The countdown to 250 actually could have begun at any point in the past that you decided that you wanted to start counting down. But we are going to start the countdown now. We have a great bunch of first-time guests coming up in the next few weeks. So be here for that. Be here next week for another episode. Thank you for listening. From the bottom of my heart, and Matt's heart, Matt's cold black heart, that doesn't feel emotions anymore. No, I'm kidding. Matt feels a lot of emotions. Like the rage I can sensing in this silence right now.
I feel every emotion at once.
That's a hellish existence for you, Matt. Thank you for listening, and have a great week, everybody.
Yeah! Flash. From this day on, let every breed of mongrel live together in peace.
Well, this is going to be an exciting one. This is going to be exciting.
Oh, you-